Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Has Darvin Ham finally found his lineup of death? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how or where you get your podcasts, it's always free and never behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube, it's where you can go hang out with over 22,000 subscribers, all of whom are wondering whether or not Darvin Ham has finally rediscovered the starting lineup from last year that was very successful for the Lakers in the process of really the weekend's games, but especially in the double overtime, 145-144. I mean, just we've watched a lot of basketball games, Andy. This was as good as any game like I've ever seen, you know, covering them.
It was pretty fantastic. I mean, just this between the marquee matchup of not just Lakers Warriors, but also LeBron and Steph, who really have owned their era in terms of the guys who've mattered the most, the guys who have changed the game the most, you know, the two guys who are in that top 10 of all time conversation, and both of them absolutely showing out. Like, you know, I mentioned on the mini show, the reaction podcast going into Sunday, as happy as I was that the Lakers won that game on a bunch of different levels, there was a part of me that felt bad for Steph, that his 46 points and the way he absolutely, particularly in the first half when Golden State was really struggling to get much consistently going, that performance gets lost in the loss and in so much other stuff that ended up happening. And on the Lakers side, I think there were more noteworthy things that would have gotten lost, like more things to talk about had the Lakers have lost. But, you know, just there was just for a regular season game between two teams hovering around 500 or in the case of the Warriors below 500, this was as instant classic can possibly get.
It was one of the, for me, it was one of those things too. I totally agree with you. And LeBron's performance was just, you know, it was a reminder of like, kind of, you know, you've had that conversation. And a lot of people on the YouTube channel have pointed out, like, you know, Andy, like 3 days ago, Andy was saying LeBron is, you know, the problem and this and that, whatever. And no, I think your point is, right, I mean, people have been not totally paying attention to since, you know, we've been writing posts for the LA Times going back years. I didn't read then either. Like, you know, the point isn't that LeBron can't turn it up. It's like, this is what it looks like when LeBron is, you know, fully engaged, you know, for a national TV game against Steph or whatever, whatever the reason. It's that he can't do it every single game. And so the Lakers have to compensate at other times. But
well, I think what people were referring to was I had said, I want to say this was after either the loss to the Clippers, which was pretty competitive, despite not having LeBron, or making a contrast to what the Lakers looked like against the Bulls with LeBron, that as far as the way they played against the Clippers and the type of intensity that they had for 48 minutes, that it is easier to do that as a team defensively, again, defensively especially, but over 48 minutes without LeBron, given where LeBron is at this stage of his career. I stand by those words. What I also noted, though, was there are other obvious trade-offs and issues and problems that come with not having LeBron, particularly down the stretch of games like, oh, I don't know, double overtime against the Warriors, where LeBron was really, really effing important. Right. Both things can be true at once. I'm right. Yes. Screw all you, except the people who like us or like me.
That's right, Andy. Tell the haters to where they can put it. But it's one
appreciate
of the
other things. 5 days. Yeah,
it's one of the things. I love each and Monday every love Friday, each and every one of you.
The everydayers especially. I phrased that a little better, but
no, it's fine. It's fine. The one thing I will say stuck out about this, you know, a game on the road with Steph kind of having his kind of throwback game, and Clay, who was god awful at the beginning of that game, came alive late and all that stuff. Like, this is a game that it's felt like over the course of the season, Lakers figure out a way to lose, and they managed to find a way to win it. You know, D'Lo, who we're going to talk about later in the show, having a, you know, pretty good game, and just like, what was it, three catastrophic turnovers in the second?
He had two turnovers, but that was on the heels of smoking a layup. And right, the Warriors scored on two out of three of those sequences involving D'Lo. Like,
right,
for him to then turn around and hit that pull up three in transition, that if he doesn't hit it, we're not even just talking about the miss. We're talking about, dude,
is he allowed to get on the airplane if he misses? Does he walk to Houston, or like, does he have to pay his own way? I mean, I think so. you're sitting on a, you know, you're flying to Houston on like United, and you sit down in your seat and you turn to your left and D'Angelo Russell's next to you, because that's how he's getting to work. And that was a cojones sort of shot.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
But I think the thing that seemed to stick out more than anything, and it's been a trend, you know, if D'Angelo Russell is one trend, then Jared Vanderbilt has been another, in terms of talking points, guys who are, you know, really starting to play well and, you know, coming into form. The rediscovery over the weekend of the mere option, Andy, of playing last year's starting lineup. That's, you know, LeBron, AD, Reeves, Russell, Vanderbilt. Darvin leaned on it hard in the Golden State game, dabbled with it against the the Bulls?
It was the Bulls on Thursday.
Yeah.
After I'd asked him about it.
No, you got him to do that. scarily, you may have gotten him to do that.
I would like to think that was, you know, not even in the recesses of Darvin's mind, but like the front, you know, part of the lobe, whatever we refer to this.
Your lobes.
I would like to think that this was front burner for Darvin and something that he was coming around to anyway, but it does seem like my asking him directly about this, and then all of a sudden we're actually seeing it. It does feel linked.
I'm sure it's like, you know, I got to get this podcaster off my back. Tired of this guy breathing down my neck.
Here's the thing, though. It actually, during the game, Doris Burke pointed out during the first half of the game that, like, this was a lineup that Darvin hadn't gone with, that he and Doris had talked about it before the game. Like, Doris Burke asked him about this. Like, I feel like Charles Barkley, you know, we need to have a dialogue. Like, I feel like I'm starting a national conversation. Like, if the season turns around moving forward and the Lakers end up going on a playoff run and actually winning a championship, I'm just going to say it, Brian. I should get a ring.
I agree.
I should absolutely get a ring.
100%. Jason of Beverly Hills needs to stop by your yes. house and size you up. Mm-hmm. I mean, more than like Alex Fudge, you would deserve it more than him.
Yes. Yes.
But let's talk about this, because, you know, the numbers are really fascinating about this, because, you know, Andy, one of my big things, and, you know, last year is not that you can't go from year to year and say, just because something, you know, they were the starting lineup last year, you know, this year's this year, last year's last year, but the numbers around this are super interesting. So let's talk about it next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by eBay Motors. Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance, from superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. If you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with the eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. And because with eBay Motors, you will end up burning rubber, not cash. And with all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. eBay guaranteed fit only available to U.S. customers.
Locked On Lakers also brought to you by FanDuel. Happy Super Bowl to all who celebrate America's number one sports book. If you're like me, Super Bowl Sunday coming in a couple weeks, it's all about scoring the best seat on the couch, grabbing your favorite football snacks, and placing some super bets. And like, this is one of these things. It's like, it's not just a game, Andy. It's a social event. It's, you know, some people do squares, some people do whatever, but like, you know, it's fun to have a little bit of something going on in between the commercials and the food and all that kind of stuff. And that is where FanDuel absolutely 100% has you covered for the final game of the season. You can bet on who will win the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 58. That's up to you. But you can also do things like which players will score touchdowns, how many points will be scored. You can go over and under. There's literally like no end to the combinations that you can put together. New customers join today. You get $200 in bonus bets if your first bet of $5 or more wins. So just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon to sign up. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. So I mentioned the Lakers in Houston tonight, Andy. You can catch every minute of Lakers hometown broadcasts with SiriusXM on the SXM app. Search Lakers. You know, like I really do believe that you can't just say because something worked last year, it's going to work this year. Now, in limited time, here are the net ratings for the five-man units the Lakers have played most often. You know, the much-hated LeBron, Davis, Russell, Prince, Reeves lineup is basically flat for the season. And I think at this point we have all just assumed that because Torian Prince is near it, it must be deep underwater and all that. It is not, as is the starting lineup that has Cam Reddish in there. It's also flat. Most of these lineups are relatively flat or terrible because the Lakers are a 500 team. But if you go to the bottom of this list here, or if you're just listening along, I'll tell you, the one that sticks out in relatively small amounts of minutes, no question.
That's part of the problem.
James Davis, Russell, Vanderbilt, Reeves, the ballyhooed starting lineup from last year, is a plus 30 in 30 minutes of play. That's real good.
Yeah. Like two-thirds of those minutes, by the way, have come in like the last 72 hours or 96 hours. I'm not even exaggerating. That's not hyperbole.
No, you're not.
Factually accurate.
And it's one of those things, too. It's like, well, you say, well, you know, okay, fine. And just to double check, I went back and looked at it last year. And that starting lineup, or that lineup, you know, in the time that there was, they were a plus 20. It's like, it's not, and this is what bugs me about it more than anything. Because I'm less concerned about the starting thing. And this is what was so good about the way you asked the question to Darvin ahead of the game on Friday. It's like, or Thursday, I should say. It's like, it's not, okay, start, don't start, or whatever. It's play them together. Why aren't they getting any minutes anywhere together? That, to me, was the real key to your question.
Yeah, and the way I phrased it, I asked very specifically, are there things that you noticed from last season, whether in the playoffs or thinking about just certain vulnerabilities that you feel like may end up getting exposed more this season, or you think that just will end up problematic about it? Like, I really asked for basically just, is there a reason that you not even that you haven't started the group, although I would start that group.
Sure. I get all the arguments for it.
Right.
But sure.
Just contrasting with what you said. I think you can make a devil's advocate argument for keeping the lineup with Torian Prince that is not completely without logic. But I also think that the argument is starting to grow more and more flimsy as things.
Torian picked a bad night to play awful.
He's also, I mean, the fact of the matter is they've looked better with Jared Vanderbilt, and Jared Vanderbilt has looked better than Torian. But anyway, yeah. I just was asking, like, is there, forget starting, not starting, whatever. Is there a reason that you're not playing that five-man unit? And Darvin's answer was essentially no, like nothing specific, but he did mention, you know, it could be good to have, you know, if you want to end up pressing that button. And we've seen that button pressed much more lately. Darvin closed the first half of the game against the Warriors with it, just like against the Bulls. And then from about halfway through the fourth quarter, more or less through the rest of the game, other than like the last possession for the Lakers offensively, he went with that grouping. And it got me wondering if nothing else, Darvin's landed on basically his version of the Golden State Warriors death lineup. Like that grouping that Golden State had when they first started going on these championship runs, that was essentially them going smaller with Draymond at center. It's not apples to apples in terms of the size discrepancy with the Lakers, but just the idea of this is the unit that we will use when we want to just choke the life out of an opponent. Like, this is the group that we feel like we can just crank things up to a really devastating mode. I'm just wondering if maybe this is the way he's decided to use that lineup, is just the version of the death group.
And there is a template for, and I'm part of the reason I'm relatively, I mean, I think it's matchup dependent, and Darvin has hinted, like, you know, I think some of this is a little bit of an overcorrection from the playoffs, where they did have to change their matchups a lot, and sure, some of the vulnerabilities with Vanderbilt have been exposed. But I actually think, and we'll get more into this, like, they've done a decent job of compensating for that with Vanderbilt, using him better, actions that make him more effective. But like, to the point of, like, there's a template for saying, you know what, this guy is probably our best, but like, we can bring him off the bench, but we're going to close things. Like, Lamar Odom is a great template for this. Like, he closed games, but he started on the bench. And, you know, Phil Jackson thought this was the right way to do it, and it certainly worked out pretty well.
Manu Ginobili with the Spurs.
Sure. Always close game. Like, but, you know, so it's like, what is the ratio? Like, the ratios over the last couple games between what Torian, for Torian's own sake, should be playing. Like, I feel terrible for him. So it's like, he's out there working as hard as he can. And, you know, he can be a pretty decent defender in a team concert, but like, you can't put him at point of attack defense on Steph Curry. That is not going to end well. It is an unfair ask for Torian to do those things. When you slot him in the right spots defensively, he holds up fine. But the ratio, it's the ratios I'm looking at here. And the way that Vanderbilt is playing, especially as long as those peripherals say, you know what, yeah, the results match the eye test. Because Vanderbilt is one of those guys, and as much as I love watching him play, it is easy to fall into the trap because he's always working so hard and he's always doing like stuff that you want to like, to assume that the results are good. And you kind of look up sometimes and like, ooh, they're not. You got to get the right combination of it. But like, lately they have been. So if he's playing well, the results are good, and the results of this lineup are good, for the love of God, keep playing it.
Well, I mean, first of all, I understand what you're saying with Vando, and we've had this discussion before, and like the idea of diminishing returns. I would rather just push the limits, sure, of whatever diminishing returns, as opposed to assume that the returns will be diminishing and just not go there, especially when...
But I don't think, just to clarify, I don't think the diminishing returns happen at like 12 minutes of play.
No, I understand that.
Like,
but
there's a lot of wiggle room to get the guy on the floor.
Sure. I get that, but I'm saying approaching, say, 30 minutes a game or whatever, I would be willing to just see what happens, as opposed to assuming the returns will be diminishing, especially when we've seen that some of the returns with other guys have also been diminishing. I mean, if this is in part a conversation because the Lakers are 24 and 23 in a year coming off when they went to the Western Conference Finals. I mean, we've had this discussion going back to last playoffs. I think a lot of the – when Darvin ended up having to – bench Vanderbilt, I got his decision. I don't think it was the wrong decision, but I also think it had in a lot of ways more to do with the other guys and their shortcomings in the series against Denver offensively
than anything Vanderbilt was doing, because unlike those guys, Vando isn't really paid to make shots. He's paid to do other stuff. There were a lot of other guys. I mean, D'Lo is the one that stuck out the most, but Dennis Schroeder's jump shot went away. LeBron's three-point shot went away. AD was struggling at the rim. Like, there were a lot of guys in that series who had their own versions of offensive struggles. And again, you had to take Vando off, and I get it, and I think Darvin made the right decision. But I don't think it's as simple as the narrative of Vando got played off the court. And I've always
thought, this is where the ecosystem stuff comes back into play. Let's talk a little bit more about this, and then D'Angelo Russell and whether or not he's actually playing his way to a future with the Lakers. We'll get to it all next.
This episode of Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Quiz, and today we're going to have a little bit of fun and test your Lakers knowledge. Which Lakers won the 2020 Finals MVP, the one in the bubble? Was it LeBron? Was it AD? Was it Dwight Howard? Was Kyle Kuzma? And as you think it over, or perhaps just know it off the top of your head, Quiz with three eyes is the next generation trivia experience. It's also the world's first platform where you can earn money playing knowledge games. And for Locked On Lakers fans, they have created an NBA quiz game where you test your knowledge, win real cash. You can play with friends or other fans and let your knowledge shine all the way to the bank. And you can play without downloading anything. Just go to app.quiz, again, 3eyes.com, and start playing today. NBA quiz is the ultimate knowledge challenge for fans that live and breathe basketball. And here's the answer. The 2020 MVP of the finals was LeBron James. Although Dwight, this was interesting. I started thinking about it. Dwight's been to two finals, one with the Lakers, one where he played against the Lakers. And Rajon Rondo was a member of the 2020 title team for the Lakers. He played in two finals against the Lakers. I've had fun playing quiz. So will you. So go to app.quiz.com to test your knowledge. Win cash today. That's quiz with three eyes, just like a three-pointer. Showcase your skills and take home cash prizes. App.quiz.com. Again, three eyes, where fans become champions.
So to make Jared Vanderbilt, I think one of the things that plays into this question of like, where is the sweet spot for Vanderbilt is very dependent on how he's deployed. And, you know, it started getting into the combinations you have on the floor, and this could impact Rui's minutes. It's like maximizing Vanderbilt's minutes might eat into Rui's. Like, you know, fans can't have everything they want here, and they can't take everything out on Taurean. But if the Lakers want to maximize the energy, and they seem like on, like, you go back through those two games, like they almost got like a spiritual lift based on what Vanderbilt was doing. They've got to try to do a better job of mitigating some of the things that do, quote unquote, get him played off the floor. I've seen a lot of people who are really good at breaking down film and stuff talk about like weak side actions and cuts and things like that they're doing to make Vanderbilt a more effective player. He is not standing at the three-point line anymore trying to shoot three. He might shoot one or two max a game. And that's what it should be, because he's not a good three-point shooter. So if the Lakers can do a better job of maximizing stuff with Vando, they can play him more, and it does mitigate that thing. It just might mean less of somebody else, because you can't do that with every role player. You can't tilt what you're doing to, you know, for five different guys across the roster. You got to pick one or two, and Vanderbilt fills a niche that nobody else is filling.
Yeah, which I think in some respects makes it more important to have him on the court, because he's in certain respects the hardest guy on this team to replicate what he does. I mean, like, unless you're gonna start deploying AD as more of a full-time perimeter defender, there are not a lot, especially since it's become very clear, especially with Cam Reddish out, that ankle injury probably has him out another week and a half minimum. Darvin does not trust Max Christie. Like, Max Christie's minutes, despite Reddish being out, are still going down. Like, it's becoming very clear. He's playing Christie the minutes that he plays him because he has to, as opposed to wanting to. So Christie, for better or for worse, you don't agree?
Well, I don't think, no, I agree that he's playing less. I don't necessarily know if it's a trust issue, though. I mean, again, if as Vanderbilt's minutes go up, they've also had, this game over the weekend, for example, was one where, guys played like 47 minutes.
Right. But Christie played eight.
I understand that. His minutes are definitely going down, from, whatever it was, 12 to 18.
I've said before, though.
I don't know if it's a trust thing or if it's a, Christie is another great example of if you cannot use him in the way that he's most effective, like he's not good. Like if you have him doing the wrong stuff, he has a negative on the floor. And so I'm just saying there, maybe it's a little bit, it's some trust, but it's also a role. As one guy gets a bigger one, another one gets a smaller one.
However you want to phrase it or, break down the semantics of trust, I don't think he trusts that the results will be good with Christie out there for a variety of reasons. I've also thought this for a while, not just over the last, week or so. And I'm not even looking to debate whether Darvin's right or wrong. I'm just saying this is why the options involving Vanderbilt become pretty narrow, because Christie is one of the guys who comes the closest to that role. He doesn't have, I think, Darvin's trust, and Cam Reddish isn't available. So right now it is in some ways Vando or nobody.
The only reason I point out is just because when people talk about he doesn't trust that guy, it tends to be distilled in like almost like personal terms. Like, he's got a problem with the player. Like,
I think he'd give Max Christie his wallet. I think he just doesn't trust him on the court. He'd give him his house keys.
I would absolutely let Max Christie. Who wouldn't you let hold your wallet on the team?
I feel like everybody on the Lakers right now, I would let hold my wallet. That, first of all, none of them are going to be tempted by my wallet over theirs. They shouldn't trust me to hold their wallet.
That's a good point.
There's no temptation at all for them to hold my wallet. My wallet is a waste of their time.
Right, it's when I pull my car up to the valet at the fancy, at the fancy hotel. Boys, I expect this back in the same condition I got it in.
But going back to Vando and the offense, like, we're seeing him doing a really good job reacting and cutting when AD is getting doubled, like along the elbows, stuff like that. That's becoming something the Lakers do regularly. I think he also, too, if other guys are making shots, and we're seeing now three-point shooting is becoming less of an issue for the Lakers, Vando can start using getting ignored by defenders to his advantage. But that's really only something that can happen if other guys are making shots.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And also if he's not expected to be one of the people that's spacing a floor. Like, it's just like, don't make him do, like, it's okay to just be a D without a three. I mean, like, the three and D thing has reached a point where, like, if you have one and not the other, you're useless somehow. Like, you're only half a person. And he can be, he's got to be better around the rim. And he has been over the last couple games. So, we're going to have Jared Vanderbilt games where the output doesn't match the effort, where he smokes too many layups, where, he makes me like, and not every game is the perfect 33 minute bin. But the point, I think, from both of us is just that, like, you can go to that lineup. There's not like a heavy commitment to where, if Darvin just seemed reluctant to attempt it after Vanderbilt was back and in good shape. Like, there were many, many reasons why Darvin couldn't do it for a long time this season. Most notably, he wasn't in the lineup. Like, he wasn't in uniform, but it took too long. And do you think that he's going to get away from it? I think he's going to keep, and he can say whatever he wants. He can talk about it. If he plays the lineup and he plays it significant minutes at the right times, I don't really care what he says about it.
No, I just care what he does. I don't care what he says.
Right.
The saying doesn't matter. It seems like he is moving more in that direction, and that's a good thing. I mean, again, whether he starts the lineup or not, if that group gets enough minutes together, I think there will be good things happening for the Lakers. In the meantime, the group involves D'Angelo Russell, who just keeps coming up with more and more reasons to at least make you debate keeping him around past the trade deadline.
Well, he's been real good. We mentioned the Cajones three-pointer in the second overtime on Saturday.
I tweeted out during the game at Cam Brothers, like D'Lo had this smile on his face that made me feel like putting up that shot. He was like the thought bubble above his head is, y'all are looking to trade me anyway, so F it, why not? he just had this, like sly smile on his face that I know was, damn, I'm so happy I made this shot because I know the stuff I screwed up before. But I wouldn't have blamed him. There was a certain amount of screw it. All you guys are doing is on the phone talking about trading me. So why not? Why not put up this shot?
It's going to be hard. Like, it's hard to, it'd be hard right now to find a guy who's just more productive that you can trade for. It gets back to what can you do defensively? Like, I'm lukewarm on the DeJounte Murray thing, but it's like, do you think this is a guy that you want to keep around for a couple of years? Okay. If the answer is that, then maybe it's worth it. Do you think that Murray with the rest, like, improves the Lakers enough defensively where they, all the other little moving parts slide into more natural places? The answer is yes. Like, the Lakers have a defensive backcourt problem, and it's going to, does this put people in better positions, including Jared Vanderbilt, including Torian Prince? Like, okay. Like, it's this five-man system, but like, just in terms of raw production, D'Lo's making a strong argument you're not going to do better.
Well, here's what I think is really interesting about this. The way D'Lo's been playing in January, he's been the Lakers' third best player. Like, period. I don't think you can make an argument for anybody else. And, you know, Austin Reeves entered the year very outwardly slated as that third guy and expected to be that third guy. As I've talked about before, I think the Lakers overestimated his readiness for that role on a contending team. He's a good player. That's not my point. Yeah. But I don't think he is ready for that. D'Lo's been better than Reeves in January. And I think not even something debatable.
No, and it's not even that Reeves has played poorly. Just Russell's been better.
But it adds an interesting wrinkle with the deadline because, you know, D'Lo is considered the primary piece that they are shopping in very large part because of his contract setup, as opposed to definitively needing to upgrade over D'Lo. Like, even if you think you could upgrade over him, if you can, you should. He's not playing in a way where you definitively need to upgrade. Like, you can make an argument, and this is something that I put out, like a poll on Twitter at Cam Brothers and also the YouTube community section for our show. If Reeves and D'Lo right now had the exact same contract, exact same years, exact same money, you can make an argument that shopping Reeves right now would make more sense in a pure basketball way. Like, in terms of just slotting what you would be looking to fix, who could be more expendable, who you would look to possibly move or want to move less. Reeves,
well, I mean, is lower on. You could get a better player.
Well, you might not if Reeves' contract was exactly the same as D'Lo's.
That's true. In the hypothetical, maybe not. In the real world, you could.
Right. And I mean, part of what makes Reeves lower on, you know, the willingness to trade him scale for the Lakers is that his contract is such a bargain. And I get it, and that matters. But from a pure basketball standpoint right now, if you were looking to make one guy more relatively untouchable than the other, all things being equal on the court, it would actually be D'Lo over Reeves.
Yeah. It's a fun hypothetical because, yeah. I mean, so again, much.
I'm not saying this to crap on Reeves, but you understand the point I'm making.
I know, I understand. Like, if you took a different player and put him next to Russell, it changes Russell. If you took a different player and put him next to Reeves, it changes Reeves. So, yes. Like, a different point guard could improve Reeves too, because some of his defensive assignments could change so that the style and all that kind of stuff takes a little load off and whatever. Like, his usage, part of the reason I think he's peaked a little bit is, and he's playing fine. Like, he's playing like well. He's not made a leap. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah. I say all this just because it demonstrates, I think, what makes this complicated for the Lakers. Right. That's all.
Sure. If you could change the sort of the usage and change the workload, it could bump some of that output a little bit too. We'll carry this into Tuesday's show, because there's a lot to this, what you're getting at here. And of course, tonight we'll get back to the Lakers versus the Rockets, which you can hear on Sirius XM. You can get every minute of Lakers broadcast with the Sirius XM on the SXM app. Search Lakers. So we'll have that. But let's look at that question, because what the Lakers need out of this deadline and what they can get, and whether they're better off waiting until the summer, is a profoundly difficult question to answer. So we'll get to all that tomorrow and throughout the week, and we'll see everybody next time.